Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, the Thursday Throwdown, the show that picks up steam each and every Thursday. It's hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, where we're going to get rain again this weekend, so I kind of feel like I live in Seattle. Story from my friend that's a meteorologist on KTLA Channel 5. We'll talk about that later. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes by quicker than Dan Rather's 60 minutes. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to the podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of them, less of me. As I lay the red carpet down, the podium's put in place, handing off the mic to you, Dr. Greg Roscoe. The threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're bringing two legends in. I'll man the show till I see you guys at the top of the hour with the questions.
Wonderful. Mark, thank you very much. And, you know, the show's doing great. We're doing great. We've been able to get some great guests on the program, and we'll continue to do that. People can get a hold of me, gjrmd308outlook.com. This evening, you know, we wanted to kind of talk about the baseball season starting. And, you know, in the past, we've talked a little bit about, you know, problems when people develop a problem. How do we solve it? You know, what are the surgical techniques, et cetera? I wanted to bring it up tonight a little bit, you know, with getting into the season. How can we as professionals here prevent our athletes from having problems? And I have two great guys on this evening. We have a retired major league pitcher, Dr. Kip Gross. He was a major league star in the 90s. Kip, you were in the baseball from about 1990 to 2000, correct?
Yes, I was. Yeah, it was good times, and I'm looking forward to today and everything we're going to be talking about baseball.
Thank you. And, you know, Kip, just a little bit, you've had an opportunity where you've played for several different major league teams, Cincinnati Reds, the L.A. Dodgers, also in Japan, the Boston Red Sox, the Houston Astros, so that you've had quite a variety of experience in the major league arena. We also have a great surgeon on tonight that handles orthopedic surgery as well as prehab for these athletes as well, and possibly helps prevent them from having surgery. And that's Dr. Matt Varicella. Matt, good evening.
Good evening. It's a joy to be back on the show again. Love being a friend of the show. Looking forward to it.
Well, thanks for being a friend of the show. I know you've had a very, very busy day in the operating room, and you came out and you're joining us on the program. So I do thank you. I know you've worked with Kip before, and we've had some very successful shows. And, you know, going back with tonight, what I'd like to do is, how do we prevent athletes from having injuries? You know, what are the mechanics that need to be in place for athletes to go ahead and to have a safe season, so to speak? And I know, Kip, you work with young people. You go ahead and do a lot of this, you know, with your business. And then I know Dr. Varicella, with his team, he's got physical therapy. He has sports medicine people working with young athletes. So, Kip, you want to kick it off, and, you know, how do we help prevent a problem? You know, does it start at the beginning of the season? Where does it start to think about prevention?
Well, you know, the whole thing with baseball and sports in particular is, you know, I'm a huge believer in you've got to stay strong. If you keep your muscles strong around all your ligaments and all your bones and everything, you've got a really good chance of staying healthy. You know, I'm pretty sure there's a number out there, but I know it's well over 90% of all injuries come from people just not being strong enough in that particular area of the body. And so you've got to do your Job exercise. You've got to lift weights in the off season. You know, you got to just keep your body in shape and keep those muscles strong in all the joints, because pretty good chance it's somewhere in a joint that's gonna break on you or get hurt. So You got to concentrate on those areas. And as the season progresses, you've got to maintain that. You know, when I was playing, I would do my Job exercise and a couple little weights for my elbow and my shoulder, probably 3-4 times a week. And I would really, really pay attention when I did that. I mean, what you're talking about earlier with the different organizations, every organization I played with was a little different with all of these things as far as how to keep certain parts of your body strong and healthy. And when I got with the Dodgers to begin with, you know, Dr. Job was their team doctor. And so I got to learn firsthand from him and the trainers how to actually do the Job weights. And it's really strange. If you like go on the internet and Google Job exercises, it'll show you what they are. But until I learn from the doctor myself and from the trainers themselves, you're really kind of wasting your time because you really have to isolate those small muscles when you're doing these exercises. And if you don't, you're just strengthening the big muscles around the small muscles. So those are the ones that usually get injured. And I'm sure both of you guys can agree with that.
Well, you know, as far as, you know, with that, Kip, which I think is a real insight into professional sports, you know, with these Job exercises and the training, does it vary from the kind of pitches that you throw, all right, and, you know, how you perceive your job and, you know, how you handle, you know, this job as a pitcher? You know, do the exercise vary with regard to the scope of service you're providing? You know, if you're throwing curveballs or splitters or whatever, do you need to develop different muscles?
Well, you know, some pitches are just harder on your arm than other pitches. I mean, in my opinion, the split finger fastball is probably the worst pitch you can throw for your arm because you're actually just, I mean, you can just sit here right now and just spread your fingers and feel the tension in your elbow. It just automatically happens. And then the second hardest pitch that's hardest on your arm, believe it or not, is a fastball because you're giving it all you've, not all you have, but you're coming through and you got to pronate through that pitch. And when you throw it like a curveball, it's not as much because now you're kind of slowing down and not using as much arm and shoulder to actually throw it. But with that said, all you kids out there and coaches, if they don't know how to throw a curveball properly, it can be the worst pitch to throw is a curveball. And that's why you probably shouldn't teach young kids how to throw them yet, because until they develop their body and get to the point where they have good mechanics, the curveball really is a bad pitch on your arm. But the split finger, I mean, I used to actually try to throw the split finger, and it was just a hard pitch for me to throw and control. But you could feel it every time you threw it on the side. You could actually feel it in your elbow when you threw, so you knew there was some damage being done in there. So I just kind of didn't want to throw it anymore. And if you look back at the history of the game, there's so many split finger fastball guys that got hurt pretty much middle of their career. Roger Craig was a manager and pitching coach in the big leagues. You probably remember with the Giants. And he was a huge teaching the split finger fastball, but so many of his pitchers got hurt. And I believe that's probably the reason why. But just to let you know, there's so many guys out there that are in the big leagues in professional baseball and what have you. They just don't take care of their arms. They don't do it. For what reason? I'll never understand it, because you're just shortening your career and you're not giving yourself all you can every time you go out on that mound. Because the stronger you are, obviously, the better you're going to pitch. So I would really, really recommend all athletes, all kids growing up to keep those joints really strong best you can.
Beautiful. And, you know, we'll get Dr. Varicella on, but, you know, with regard to, Kip, the phases of throwing, all right, and the mechanics of throwing, how were you taught those? You know, who taught you the different phases and how to use the biomechanics in your pitching? How did you learn that?
Well,
when you were in the majors?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. It really is. You know, growing up, I grew up in Western Nebraska, and I didn't have any pitching coaches, any baseball coaches that really knew anything about the game, especially about care of your arm or anything like that.
Sure.
Or mechanics wise. So when I got to the University of Nebraska and walked on, one of the first things I learned there was how to play long toss, not hard toss, long toss. And when I refer to that, I'm trying to say, well, you kind of go one step at a time. You play catch. You never throw a ball on a line. Never do. You just lob the ball, keep lobbing the ball, and you step back a step from your throwing partner every time you throw it. And sooner or later, you're so far out that now you're throwing it, basically you're throwing the ball over the light towers at the stadium. That's how high you're throwing it, because you're trying to throw it as far as you can without exerting your arm. So what this does, though, when you're playing long toss, eventually you're going to have to put a crow hop in it to throw it a little bit further. And when you do a crow hop, your momentum of your hips are going towards your target, so it's teaching your lower half how to throw a baseball. And believe it or not, when I learned that at Nebraska, Mike Evans was actually the pitching coach there and taught me that, I never had an arm injury again, not one. And it was because I was starting to learn to use my lower half. And then what happened was I went to Puerto Rico one winter to play down there in San Juan, and my pitching coach was Claude Osteen, and he was one of the top better pitchers back when Drysdale and Koufax were pitching. He was actually the number three guy in that staff, so a lot of people don't remember him. But he took me down to the bullpen one day on a game when we got rained out. I was supposed to start, and he said, let's go throw a bullpen. And we sat down there, and he told me the biomechanics and the mechanics of using your lower half properly. And if you can use your front side lower half properly and do it with a lot of strength, you are going to improve your mechanics dramatically. And I just couldn't believe what I was hearing, because, you know, most people, when they think about pitching, they think about the arm and the upper half and your shoulders and everything.
Yeah.
No. When I teach pitching, I don't even mention the upper half of the body, because if you're doing the lower half properly, the upper half learns from the lower half. I can't tell you how many kids I've corrected just by doing this. And over all the years that I've been teaching pitching, I've basically probably three times total, with all the thousands of lessons I've given, have I even mentioned something about the upper half as far as how to change something. And so and just like hitting is, you know, all your big muscles are down below, correct? So if you're using your big muscles, your upper body, smaller muscles are going to follow in sync. And that's basically how it is. I mean, I could sit and talk about mechanics all day long, but that's basically how I learned about mechanics.
Well, you know, Kip, along the same lines, when you have students come in and you start talking about the lower half, do they say, what the hell are you talking about? You know, what about my pitching? What about my arm? What about my fingers, et cetera? I mean, do you go ahead and say, hold on, Charlie, we're going to start with the bottom up? I mean, how do you approach that? What's the approach?
Well, that's exactly how it is, because, you know, they'll come to me and I'll have them throw a little bit on the mound. You know, I go through your routine you normally do because I want to see it. And it's always the same. It's always the same. They just have bad mechanics and they can't throw strikes. They don't have very good velocity. And the parent's sitting over here, and I explain to them that, hey, I'm going to actually hold on to your kid here and put him in some positions, and he's actually going to throw the ball. I'll lead him down the mound. I'll actually hold on to his front leg and foot and everything, and I'll lead him down the mound, and he'll instantly start throwing strikes with more velocity. And the parents stop me and say, Kip, how is he throwing the ball to the glove right now when you're holding on to him? And I always tell him, it's because I am teaching him, and I'm controlling his front side for him. I said, it's going to take a lot of time. So it takes a lot of strength to do this, and so sooner or later, we're going to do this over and over, and you're going to find out that pitching is all about your lower half front side. And if you can learn to control that, then you are going to eventually throw strikes, and I promise you, you'll throw 5 to 7 miles an hour harder. You definitely will.
And are they amazed? I mean, is it something
they definitely. I mean, I've had parents just look at me and say, Kip, how's he doing this? They're absolutely amazed. He said he couldn't even hit the catcher 2 minutes ago when he was throwing on his own. And I'll say that's because I am controlling his lower half for him. And eventually he's going to have to, because I can't go on the mound during the game and do it for him. So eventually he's going to have to learn to do this all by himself and figure it out that way. But we'll do it over and over and over again like that, because I'm a true believer in feel. If you don't ever feel it, you're never going to be able to do it. You know, that's why baseball is so unique in the sense where you can't just open a book. You can't just turn on a video on YouTube and say, do this with pitching, do this with pitching, or do this with hitting or fielding. You can't do it, because if you don't feel it, you're never going to do it. Because you always think you're doing what the video says or what the book says, but in reality, if you don't have a coach like myself watching you, it's never even close to what you think it is in your mind. So it's always good to have a really, really good coach with you watching everything you're doing.
Wonderful. And, you know, Kip, does it make a difference if you're teaching a young man to pitch left-handed or right-handed, or is it the same mechanics?
It's exactly the same mechanics, And it's just you're turned around from the other side. Fortunately, left-handers have a little advantage because there's not as many, you know, you don't see lefties as much, and you got a, they got a bigger, you know, advantage on left-handed hitters especially. But, yeah, it's the same mechanics. But you know, the first thing I always tell my kids when they after the first lesson is, now what you need to do is you need to go home and start learning how to strengthen your lower half and your hips and your legs, because that's where pitchers are. Very rarely do you see a pitcher in the major leagues that doesn't have either a big ass or you know, good, strong-looking legs. You very rarely see that, and that's a big reason. And don't get me wrong here when I say this either. There are so many guys in the big leagues have terrible mechanics, and that's why they last for just, you know, a couple months or whatever.
Sure.
Next thing you know, they're on the surgeon's you know, bed in there getting Tommy John's or something else, and it's just, but that's one of the problems with today's baseball is all these coaches and organizations, all they care about today is velocity. And so they wear these kids out. I just got off the phone a couple of weeks ago with a top pitching instructor in one of the biggest organizations ever in baseball, and he was telling me they don't care anymore. They just don't. They know a guy's going to blow out. They're going to bring another kid up from AAA and let him do the same thing till he blows out, and hopefully by that time a couple others are ready to go, and they just keep going through the cycle all year long now. It's really a travesty what's happening in baseball right now.
Wow. That's sad to hear that. It sounds like it's a business, and these pitchers are, any of these players are expendable. And, you know, let me go back to Dr. Varicella. Dr. Varicella, you know, when you're doing your prehab, when you're going, you know, using your physical therapy people and, you know, your sports medicine people, how do you look at this process?
Well, so first off, this is why I love doing shows with Kip, because Kip gets it. And, you know, I wish that was all out on the front lines. Everybody got that. I was just thinking about a couple of things while Kip was going through his sequence there. I was just talking to a parent of a 14-year-old, and we were talking about how good he is at pitching. And it's funny because the first thing that came out of his mouth was the velocity. He's throwing 75 miles an hour. It had nothing to do with anything else, but it just it does. It ultimately comes back to velocity. The other part, too, is – I agree that is very sad with what's happening with the sport. And I actually would liken that to what I'm seeing on the occupational side with laborers that come in and they've blown out both shoulders. I mean, they just end up becoming a cog in the wheel, and it's kind of sad. They're just another number. Then that person's expendable. Okay, it's next man up or next woman up, however it is. And that really is a shame. But the interesting part about the connection with this, because I specialize in upper extremity, I also do lower extremity, and I always get asked about this by parents, like what are these risk factors for the injuries? And it really comes down to poor mechanics. If you think about on the knee end, so we're talking about the bottom half, one of the major risk factors for injuring the knee is poor and trunk dysfunction, so it's more the upper half on that end that's injuring the knee. So it's interesting how the body is and how it's all connected. But really, from my standpoint, when I see these types of repetitive overuse injuries, elbow pain, Tommy John, whether it's a complete rupture or a partial rupture, certainly in the partial situation or even a stressed ligament on the inner part of the elbow, that's the Tommy John ligament, if you get them into the right program, and the physical therapy program and return to throwing program, the majority of times those problems go away right away. And, you know, outside of those more significant injuries, that those are the ones that end up with surgery. But that's the state of healthcare right now. And I tell a lot of the athletes that come in and they have these injuries, I say, really, we need these injury prevention programs, which need to be rolled out across the country, but they have to be done correctly by knowledgeable individuals such as Kip and others that I've worked with. But that's the situation. A lot of times I see them kind of on the back end where the injury's already progressed to a certain point where, absolutely. So the lecture that I always say to the parents and the athletes is I say, okay, you're here now. Let's work to get to the point where you should have probably been, you know, 5-10 years ago or even, you know, more sooner than that. But that's my perspective, is that, you know, it really comes down to the lower half. That's really the foundation, and getting that core, because, you know, a lot of times you're thinking it's not as intuitive. Well, if I got to throw harder, I just got to do bicep curls or work my shoulders.
Sure.
And yes, those job exercises come into play. But the lower half, it's funny, if you talk to an athlete, so I actually had a pitcher one time recently, a few months ago, who came in and had a partial UCL injury. That's the Tommy John ligament. Ulnar collateral ligament is what it stands for. But he said, the dad was talking to me, and he said, what's one way we can prevent this? And I actually said, don't skip leg day. And he's like, look at me, you know, what do you mean? That's what it comes down to. Get that foundation and then work from there. So that's kind of
beautiful.
My perspective on that side. But, yeah, beautiful.
Thank
discussion
you, Matt.
So far.
Yeah, you know, as far as looking at this process, we have a young athlete, a little leaguer. You know, do we start talking about mechanics at the little league level, Kip? Or do we wait till they're in county league or, you know, sandlot or whatever?
You know what? I've had kids as young as 5 years old come to me for lessons, and I treat them just like I would a professional athlete. I do. You know, if you're going to pitch, you're going to automatically start putting strain on that arm. So let's start getting your mechanics to work right away. And I do the same thing with a 5 year old as I do a 25 year old. It doesn't matter because the mechanics are still the same. Just like doctors saying right now, you know, don't miss leg day when you're working
sure.
out, because that's the foundation. And I wish so many more people would talk about the lower half. It's so funny. I teach so many ex-professional pitchers and hitters, kids, mechanics. And you would think that these ex-professional guys would know it, but they don't, because they never were able to get to that point to have good mechanics. I was fortunate enough to get to the point with Claude Osteen and a few others to understand the mechanics of throwing a baseball. And that's why so many of these guys in the minor leagues just don't make it, is because they can only go so far. They can only go so far with what they have and develop. And that's why I'm talking about all your number one and number two starters in the big leagues have great mechanics. I promise you they do. All the ones and all the number twos, you know, the guys that last for 15, 10, 15, 20 years in the big league, they're not getting away with it just because they're a different animal,
sure.
a different person in the world. You know, they always say, well, this guy, you know, he was blessed with a great arm. No, he wasn't. He was blessed if he was able to be with a pitching coach or learn great mechanics. That's what he was. They talk about Nolan Ryan. So there's never going to be another Nolan Ryan. There's been a ton of Nolan Ryans. They've been guys that were better than Nolan Ryan. But what Nolan Ryan did was he improved his mechanics as he got older, and that's why he got better as he got older. He basically had two careers. If you break his front half of his career and his back half of his career, two different people completely. And the reason why, I always use him for mechanics, you know, for videos and stuff with kids, because as he got older, his mechanics were spot on. He used that front hip and front leg better than anybody. I mean, he had that knee all the way up to his nose when he would pitch, and he would bring it down slowly and continue with that front hip to his target. So, yeah, it all comes down to mechanics, using your front half, lower half, and strengthening that lower half and the core, no question about it.
Wow. And, Kip, have you gone ahead with your teaching, you know, put this in a book or a video, training exercises? You know, how do you teach this? You know, what are the salient points that you're able to get good results? You know, is it hands-on, on the mound, or do you send these people out to watch your videos or to watch Nolan Ryan? How do you teach?
I teach by showing them if I'm going to do one like a FaceTime or a video, I will show them how I by myself or with my son or somebody, I will show them exactly what I'm doing when I'm giving a lesson, and so they can see it. But there's when they're with me, I'm hands-on big time with these kids. I mean, I'm not just sitting back there crossing my arms or holding the glove. I'm getting in there dirty with them and holding their legs up and bringing the leg down slow and showing them exactly the positions they got to get, how far they got to get their hip out to the target and continue at the front side and the front hip. And, you know, I always it's kind of funny about me and pitching and, you know, being from Western Nebraska is I always bring up, I'll ask the kid, have you ever shot a gun before? And, you know, most of them say no. I'll say, well, do you know what a sight on a gun is? Yeah, I know what a sight is. I tell them, that's your hip bone. That sight on your gun is your hip bone. And then I'll ask them the question, if you were going to shoot a target from 60 foot 6 inches away, would you rather have a pistol to shoot that target, or would you rather have a rifle to shoot that target? And they all come back and say, a rifle. I'll say, why do you want to use a rifle? They say, well, it's more accurate. I'll say, why is it more accurate? They say, well, it has a longer barrel. And then I come back and I say, that's what we're going to do to your hip. We're going to turn that pistol into a longer barrel rifle. So now when you shoot that gun, you're going to have a lot more accuracy when you throw and be able to throw it with more velocity. And they start visualizing a little bit what I'm saying. And then I start feeling it. Sure. Like, I get it now. And that's kind of what I do most of the time with all of them, just try to refer it back to something that they've done in their life.
And, you know, Kip, with regard to your method being successful, have you created people that are able to follow their dream to get into the majors or to go ahead and, you know, be a pitcher at some level? Is that what you've done?
You know, I've had numerous kids that gone into play college ball and professional ball. But it's funny what you're saying right now, because when I was with the Dodgers, you know, I actually learned from Claude Osteen in the winter before I got traded to the Dodgers and the Reds. But when I was with the Dodgers, I would actually have like Oral Hershiser, Kevin Gross,
yeah,
Jim Gott, some of these pitchers would actually take me down and have me watch them throw in the bullpen, not knowing that Ron Paradowski wasn't around, because that would have kind of been bad. But they'd ask me to watch their mechanics and see if there's anything that they could improve. And here I am,
wow,
the guy that's coming on there. Yeah, it happened quite a bit, because I always talk mechanics and how it should work. And, you know, Earl Hershiser, you know, he blew out his shoulder. He had to completely rehab and surgery on that. And, you know, all these guys, they get hurt. And I just never got hurt. It just never happened, because I started getting the good mechanics and using the lower half properly.
Sure.
And, you know, when success breeds success. And, you know, a lot of the guys did have success keeping healthy. They had great success on the mound when they were healthy, but they didn't stay healthy. And so, yeah,
sure,
tons and tons of pitchers, to answer your question, yes.
Oh, what? Good, beautiful. And then, Kip, another question. How can one identify a pitcher with good mechanics? If we're watching a professional, you know, throw, what do we look for? How do we know if this guy has good mechanics?
Great question. That's a great question. I wish more people would ask that question. You know, when I'm coaching or have a team, or I'm watching a pitcher on TV or at a stadium, whatever, the only thing I look at is his front side, lower half, hip, and leg. That's all I watch. I never look at the upper half. And this is one of the reasons I've never had a pitcher that's ever gotten hurt or injured, is because when I see him starting to lose control of that front side, lower half, I go out and ask him, is everything okay? And I'll say, hey, your front side's getting tired right now. You're going to have to really concentrate on it for a while. I'll go back to dugout. As soon as they do it again, I take them out. They're out of the game, because I'm not going to let them get hurt. So if you watch that lower
sure.
half and that hip, the hip, when they start giving up on their lower and their front side driving to the plate and to their target, when they
yeah.
start giving up
yeah.
on that, that's when you know they're going to fatigue. They start to fatigue. And just like your doctors, you guys are doctors, you'll understand, as soon as your lower half starts getting fatigued, what's going to happen? The upper half's going to go with it, and it's going to start fatiguing. That's when you cause injuries. Just because he's still throwing strikes and getting guys out doesn't mean that he's not fatiguing his arm even more.
Sure.
So I've always been a huge proponent of get that kid out of there, bring another one in now. It's his time to shine. The other kids can rest for a few days now. That's
sure.
how I've always done it.
And, Kip, if that's the case, you've taken someone out, what do you do with them then to rehabilitate this? If you see they're fatiguing, you know, their lower half is weakening, the upper half is weakening, do you then put them in the weight room? Do you then, you know, have them go jog? What do you do with them? How do you rehabilitate
oh, yeah.
them?
Yeah, the next after that day, you go and have a beer or scotch or whatever you want to have, and you rest the rest of the night and let it heal on its own. Well, okay, they're going to have some Kool-Aid then and a soda, but yeah, you give them a rest and let them rest overnight, and that's one of the best things that you can do for your body is rest it. And that's the problem with baseball today, is you have all these travel teams, whatever, they don't let these kids rest anymore. I've always told every pitcher I've ever had, at least 2 to 3 months off, never throwing another ball again. But to answer your question is the next day after a start, you go run. You go run and get all that. You know, they say the lactic acid isn't real. I could feel all that in my body just coming out as I'm running. You can feel it because your body, you know, you're getting those muscles and stuff and the blood pumping again, and it moves that out of there really, really well. And then on the next day is when you go and you start training for your mechanics again by throwing on the side for about 10, 15 minutes and working those mechanics back to where you were before to get that feel again. Because when you're in a game, like say you're in the seventh, eighth inning and that front side lower half starts going away, you're now feeling the last time you threw a baseball was not good. And so you got to get that feeling back again. So the next time you get on that mound, you got to help them make sure they're using their lower half well again. And then, like I said, you know, you're always doing your job weights, keeping those shoulders and elbows healthy. And two or three times a week, that's what you do. You just keep going through the cycle all the way through the season.
You know, Kip, with regard to what you're saying, that these professionals need to work on their mechanics, work on their body throughout the entire season. It's not something they start and then they just pitch over and done. They continue to work on what they're doing to improve the quality of their instrument, so to speak. Is that a true statement?
For the most part, it is, yes. And that's what I'm saying. Some of these guys don't ever do it because they just think they're immune to being hurt. Because, you know, they're throwing, you know, today's guns are showing 100 miles an hour. They're really throwing 93, the old guns that we had. But some of these guys just don't keep care of their bodies. They don't. And that's one of the problems with it is when you don't keep care of your body and exercise it and keep those muscles built up, you're just waiting for an injury to happen. And it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I think I mentioned this to you the last time I was on the program with you. Since I've retired, my son and I, you know, we watch a lot of baseball on TV and what have you. I can't even tell you how many pitchers I have told my son, this guy is eventually going to have Tommy John surgery. And I've only missed on one since 2001, and that was Frankie Rodriguez.
Oh my God. Wow.
because he improved his mechanics as he went along. He got better and better with the mechanics. And like I said, all I'm looking at is front side, lower half. The one redheaded kid, big bushy redheaded kid from the Dodgers, I can't remember his name, his first start in the big league, I'll never forget it, a few years ago, his first inning, I said, Tucker, this kid is just doomed for Tommy John surgery. And he's like, what do you see? I said, he don't have a front side lower half. He doesn't have any. No question.
Wow.
Two starts later, he blows out his elbow, has to have Tommy John. And now he just did it again, I guess, I think for the second time. It's just mechanics. If you have good mechanics, lower half, strong, it's going to happen. I missed on one in all the years, just one.
Wow. So your diagnostic skills are excellent. And, you know, Dr. Barrichello, along that same line, you know, you're preparing your patients to have, you know, quality lives without doing surgery, correct?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I love that the bulk of this discussion, we didn't jump to, you know, as a upper extremity surgeon, I love that discussion really mostly involves mechanics and the non-operative management, getting everything lined up because I'd be curious, you know, not to put Kip on the spot here, but do parents ask you about, you know, should my kid have Tommy John surgery to increase velocity? Because I'll get asked that question on my end. Like, kids actually think, oh, I'm going to throw harder once I come back from the surgery. So, I don't know if that's something that you see or not, but I get that question a lot.
Well, you know, I've never had a parent ask me that, but I've had numerous kids, you know, say, God, you know, I heard this guy blew his arm out on purpose so he could, you know, get Tommy John and throw harder. I said, it has nothing to do with the surgery. You guys are completely on the wrong wavelength here. I said, the surgery, what happened is now the rehab, you get stronger.
Rehab.
And that's why they're throwing harder after the surgery. It has nothing to do with the surgery. It's the rehab and strengthening those muscles and all around it. And that's why they're now throwing harder. That's why I've always said, if nothing else, the steroid era should have taught baseball players, just get stronger. Just get stronger, and you're going to get better. That's all it is. If you get stronger, you're going to throw harder, you're going to run faster, and you're going to hit balls further. And that's, you know, you're 100% right, Doc. That's how it is. And you get kids that actually think blowing it out is going to throw the ball harder. And that's one of the problems.
I've said
for years and years, the worst thing that ever happened to baseball was the invention of the radar gun. And I'll never back down from that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I see from my perspective, too, is that a lot of times with these schools, even at the high school level, even, you know, decent-sized schools, it's not just, you know, 100 kids graduating class, but it's even more like mid-sized schools. They're actually cutting resources, and I see a decrease in the number of athletic trainers that are at these schools. So that worries me because it even more loads the end in setting all these kids up for a ticking time bomb. We used to joke whenever I was doing my fellowship down at University of Kentucky, a lot of those schools were, it was a Band-Aid and a Bible. Like, they literally had nothing else, and there was no, like, medical, and we're not talking that long ago. So it's kind of sad, the state of affairs, but shows like this and, you know, Kip doing your thing and then my team on my end, we're really trying to get it to the point where, you know, no matter what type of injury, whether it's Tommy John, ACL reconstructions, it's, okay, you're here now, but how can we reverse that process and make sure I don't see you back? Because, you know, and I know we're not talking about the technique and the outcomes have improved because the surgical technique has improved as well, but the bulk of it is that return to throwing program, the rehab, and it's sad that a lot of times it takes the surgery to be the nidus to kind of turn that all around and then get that athlete better, and, you know, God forbid they injure again, because the outcomes after a revision Tommy John surgery are not great at all.
Excellent. You know, I'd like to go to the studio in L.A. Mr. Mancini, I know you have questions for our guests. Would you want to go ahead, Mark, and let us know what you have?
Yeah, let me get a couple of them in because this is a great interview, and I know we're going to be up against it with about 20-something minutes left in it. Peter coming in from Sioux City. Basically says, how do you structure a pitching lesson? That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
How do you structure a pitching lesson? This question for me?
Yeah.
It's the same thing I do with every pitcher. I do the same thing. I you know, you do nothing but get them in the right position for so their mechanics are good. And that's all I work on. I promise you. I've never, you know, I'll teach him how to throw. By the way, just to let you know, I've never taught a kid an off-speed pitch until his mechanics are ready for it. I've never done it. I never will do it. Because the problem with that is when you do start teaching it, they're going to get more and more frustrated because if you can't throw a fastball for a strike, I guarantee you're not going to be able to throw a curveball or a changeup for a strike. And so that's why I do that. But the same thing over and over again, let's work on repetition, getting that front side lower half working, getting that hip driving to your target as far as long as you can without giving up on it. And it gets very repetitive, but that's all of what sports is. You got to do things over 10,000 times over and over again until it might start clicking and working right. And if you don't do it, you're just going to go backwards.
So it's repetition, repetition, repetition.
Yeah. And feel it every time. Once you start feeling that, you're good.
You got to feel it.
Steve,
all right.
Steve Corvallis, Oregon, another regular contributor to these shows, says, is there a golden rule for pitching?
A golden rule? Just like I'm talking, the golden rule is great, create great mechanics. If people aren't learning from these number one and number two starters in the big leagues, I don't know what you're learning from because these guys win. They have good mechanics. They very rarely ever get hurt. And if they do get hurt, it's because of some freak thing or later in their career when, you know, their bodies are getting older and age. It's like Nolan Ryan at 46 years old. His last pitch was, 96 miles an hour on the old guns. And it's just repetition and make sure your mechanics are good. And if you have good mechanics, you're going to be able to throw the ball where you want, and then the velocity is going to be there for you and probably a lot of movement, and it's going to work so much better for you. So, yeah, mechanics again.
All right.
Okay, let me take one more, and then I'll get it back to you guys. Albert from Poway, another regular contributor to the shows, it's basically says, how does a skinny guy get to increase the speed of a fastball?
Well, skinny, you know, you had your oil can Boyds of the world that pitched, you know, and I was never big. You know, one of the things with me, growing up, it's a funny little thing, but as a little kid, I always wanted to be a bodybuilder. I don't know. I just always wanted a big guy, whatever. And my genes wouldn't allow it. But I lifted and I lifted and I lifted and I got stronger and stronger and stronger. So it's not necessarily a skinny guy out there. It's a strong guy. You can be skinny and very, very strong. My senior year, I won the state championship powerlifting meet for the state of Nebraska. And I outlifted the two – the two weight classes ahead of me, and I was probably the skinniest guy out there, and it was just because I always concentrated on trying to get stronger as I was trying to build muscle. But obviously, you know, my body didn't allow me to build muscle. It just allowed me to get stronger. So the stronger you are, the better you're going to be.
And Dr. Matt Varicella, do you find that to be true also with your rehabilitation after surgery?
Oh, absolutely. I was going to throw in there that you could be a skinny guy with jacked legs and really built legs, and you could probably get your velocity with that too. But yeah, you're right. It's that's why I've spent so much in my practice with building the physical therapy side. And, you know, a lot of surgeons don't, you know, there's a competing interest. I'm not knocking a lot of my colleagues, but, you know, the surgeons, a lot of times we're focused on the technique, and that's our training, and we're always technique. We were talking about repetition. It's the same thing from a surgeon standpoint. But really, the most successful surgeons and the ones that build great sports medicine programs really know to reinforce and add the resources to the boots on the ground, the athletic trainers, the physical therapists, you know, getting a team educated that they know the return to throwing program. That's the best investment, and that's how we have such a good reputation at this point. The surgical part is the smallest percentage. It's all the rehab, and then, you know, we focus on prehab. Sure. As you mentioned, Greg, prehab is the biggest challenge because you got to get that communication out there, and it's so hard being in my position because I'm way back on the back lines, but it's, you know, how can we get that information out to the athletic trainers? Well, okay, the athletic trainers are being cut across the board at all the schools. Okay, let's do different routes, social media, you know, having different, like, you know, Dr. Morgan, who works with me as well, too. Like, that's a big part of her role to getting that out there. And then all of a sudden you start to change the narrative and you start to decrease the injury rate. But it's hard to get, you know, the healthcare dollars to be behind that type of thing, but that's where it should be, really.
Excellent. You know, just a point with having you two professionals. You know, Matt, would it be helpful, consultant as Kip Gross for your program? Would you want to consult him at all on a case or go ahead and get his opinion or a video of what you're doing that, you know, you may have a problem with or you're not winning? Is that out of line, so to speak?
No, it's not out of line. And actually, at one point, I was going to interject and be like, Kip, do you want to work with my team? And but, like, there's a lot of truth to that. And that's you can imagine you go to a hospital and you try to convey this type of information. Okay, I need consultants or ancillary support, people on the side that know this stuff, because the reality is, I'll have a parent that comes up and they're asking me about the throwing mechanics. My wheelhouse for sports is basketball. That's what I played throughout my whole life. I was a catcher growing up, but I stopped playing baseball. But a lot of times they're looking at the surgeon, okay, how do we do this return to throwing program? And I can explain the anatomy and explain a lot the importance of it, but I need somebody like Kip, who's doing it day in and day out, to actually execute that success on the front end of it, and then also the back end after an athlete comes in with an injury.
And it's using all these resources to help rehabilitate a patient, taking all that information and knowledge and giving him the best shot at getting better and improving his life.
Yeah. I'll say a lot of times that the recovery, whether it's a non-operative, an injury that doesn't require surgery, which, again, is the majority of them, or in the surgical situation, I always lay the foundation and say, okay, the work really starts before the surgery, if you need the surgery, or if, you know, we're just getting you back from an injury, it's, okay, let's correct the mechanics. The successful outcome, it's a perfect storm. All of the parts have to go together. And, you know, for example, an ACL injury, I'm saying the foundation starts prior to surgery. Then I do my part as the surgeon, but then the bulk of the work happens on the back end. If any of those pieces fall out, that athlete is not going to have a successful outcome. So, yep, it's a lot of work and effort to convey that type of information to patients and family members and athletes, but that's really what should be done on a due diligence level.
Got it. And, you know, if someone has had a recurrent problem, then there has to be something that has been missed in the process. Do you agree with that?
I do, and that's interesting that you bring that up. That's a really good point, because many times what I have to do is, if I see an athlete is back for the same problem, you know, definitely a second time, but even sometimes I'll see it 3, 4, 5 times. Then I actually look, okay, what's the root cause here? Oh, they're at a high school that doesn't have an athletic trainer. And then we start to dig into that. Okay, how can we fill the gap here? Which you can imagine, a lot of people don't have time to do that, but you really should. Sure. I can't tell you how many times I've had an athlete come in, even after a surgical problem. And, like, for example, if it's a knee injury, I test their hips, and they have extreme hip weakness. And I say, well, I did 3 or 4 months of physical therapy. So then I look where they did the physical therapy. Okay, maybe we need to get you into a different program. But again, a lot of times that gets lost because it's a little bit more nuanced and individualized, and we are in such a standardized, limited resource situation, especially in healthcare.
Medically.
But yeah, you gotta fill those gaps somehow. That's the big challenge.
Got it. Yeah, I think the other thing, Matt, that you're saying with regard to your treatment plan, you really have to be on top of each phase of treatment, either pre-surgical, post-surgical, so that you know that care is being given to get the best result for the patient.
Absolutely. Yes.
No, very good. You know, if I can go back to Kip. Kip, I just had an email come across my computer, and they want to know, are the mechanics the same that you teach for a woman or a man that's a pitcher?
Absolutely, yes. It's interesting that's just came up. Way back when I first retired, there was a camp that was being put on in Arizona, and they asked me to come and be one of the coaches over there and do it. And this girl knew that I taught mechanics, and so she actually joined this camp so I could work with her a little bit. And you do the same thing with a woman as you do a guy. And you know what's kind of funny? We're talking about this, what with a woman thing is, there is starting to be some women now, they're actually raising their skills as far as pitching in the game. They're not anywhere near being major leaguers or professional, you know, on the higher level by any means. But they're learning that, if you improve your mechanics as a woman, you can throw harder. And if you're an athlete, like all pitchers are, then you got a good chance of getting better and doing the same things. You know, this girl that came there, she was super sweet and really, you know, she just wanted to learn, you know. And it was really fun working with her for 3 weeks that this camp went on. And she learned a lot, and she got stronger, and she got better in the 3 weeks. So, absolutely, same thing as a man from a woman, yes.
Wonderful. You know, I have another one coming through here, Kip, if you don't mind. With regard to teaching mechanics to a baseball pitcher versus a softball pitcher, are the mechanics grossly different?
Well, I was a high school coach for softball for 3 years when my daughter was in high school, and I kind of stayed out of it, the pitching part, because, you know, it's a completely different motion because you're throwing underhand. But with that said, you still have to lead the front side. I actually got a hold of, I can't remember his name. He was the head coach at Arizona that won all those softball titles for World Series. And I got a hold of him and asked him a few questions about the pitchers and the hitters. And he told me, whatever you're teaching the hitters in baseball and the pitchers in baseball, teach the pitchers the same thing. Because I was a little scared to go in there and start, you know, just taking over and saying, well, you got to do this as a softball pitcher. But at the same time, when they teach pitching in softball, they have like a 6-inch wide strip down below, and they got to keep everything on that strip when they're throwing to the plate. And so in order to do that, you have to lead with your front side. You still have to. And if you don't, then you're going to be wilding all over the place. And fortunately, though, women don't get hurt because they're throwing underhand all the time, but with their arms, but yeah, you still got to use the lower half the best you can. And if you turn on the TV and watch these women's softball, look at their lower halves. They're big and strong, all of them.
Wonderful. And, you know, Kip, does it make a difference pitching-wise whether you're pitching off a mound or there's no mound? Does that make a difference, you know, in this whole phases of throwing and things like that?
You know, Mark, you know, one of the things, Greg, what you're talking about right there, I am such a huge proponent of never pitching on flat ground. I don't get it. Personally, if you're going to throw on if you're going to pitch, get on a mound and pitch on a mound and use that front side to get down that hill. I think what happens is these people now, they throw flat ground work all the time, and now you're having to adjust your mechanics to throw on a flat ground. And that's why I try to teach long toss so much, is because when you do that crow hop, your hip has got to be up just like it is when you're throwing down a hill. And then you're actually throwing the ball upward, which makes that flat ground now downward that you're throwing. So I try to keep everything the same as far as I can through long toss and always, always on a mound if you're going to pitch. Never flat ground for me.
Beautiful. And, you know, I have one more question, Kip. I came across the email. Why did Nolan Ryan have to retire?
Because he finally blew out his elbow. I mean, he was 46 years old. You know, I think the one game he threw 256 pitches, and then he came back 3 days later and started another game and went 9 innings on that one too. Like I said, if you have great mechanics, you're going to have more longevity with your arm and your body because you're just sinking the biomechanics, whatever you want to call it, all the way through from the feet all the way up to when you release the ball. It's a fluid motion, and you're putting less strain. Anybody that can throw for all the years that he did and finally blow out at 46 years old, you got to understand one thing. The arm was never meant to throw a baseball overhand. It's just not made that way. And you're putting so much stress on that elbow and that shoulder every time you throw it. But the more we take that stress away, the longer you're going to be able to pitch with less injuries. And that's exactly what Nolan Ryan did over his career. And, you know, finally his ligament just said, I'm done. That's kind of what happened. And he walked off the mound and said, all right, I'm finished after all these years. So what a great career,
wow,
though, to watch him and be able to see him throw seven no-hitters. What a pleasure.
What an athlete. And, you know, with regard to the mechanics, and I think both you and Dr. Varicello understand the mechanics, the biomechanics of this are so important, you know, as well as the surgical techniques. Do you agree with that, Matt?
Yes. Sorry, the last part of the question cut out there. Sorry, can you repeat that?
Surely. You know, the biomechanics that are involved in rehabilitation are as important as the surgery that you do.
Oh, I would argue more important. I mean, you know, it's kind of it's hard to compare apples to apples with that, but really it's, you know, if a patient is on the table, an athlete's on the table, you got to have a surgeon who knows what obviously he or she's doing, and the technique has to be perfect. But again, that goes back to that, the parts, the perfect storm, the variables that lead to a successful outcome. If it is surgical, that technique obviously is paramount. But you know, the foundation, the bulk of the work is really done prior, but that's the area that lacks the most resources. And then from my standpoint, we reinforce and kind of support the aftercare, because I always say each athlete, one and done. That's what I say. It's like, you know, it's March Madness. Like
one and done.
But I want it to, yes, one surgery, and that's it. I never want to see you back on the table. You know, see you a couple times in the office. Let's get you back on the field. But I don't want to ever see you again. No offense.
Got it. And, you know, Mr. Mancini, do you have any last questions for us?
Well, let me take one more. Galen coming in from Chelmsford, Mass., another regular one, and then we'll wrap it up. But he says, boy, you can learn a lot about pitching. And basically says the problem that I've heard on a lot of shows is previously that these young kids burn their arms out in high school, and that's why you've got the Frank Jobe type of surgeries down the line where they are never the same. Is that correct? And this message is basically going to Kip Gross, I guess.
Well, you know, I don't think it's just high school. I think it's just the whole combination of the mechanics and learning. I've always said if you have good mechanics, you can throw forever. There was one time I went and did a high school game. I pitched. I told this coach in California that I'd come over and pitch to his team one time in the offseason because I was getting ready. I actually pitched 18 innings, and I never came off the mound. I pitched for both teams. And it was I was really working on mechanics that day, and I was throwing. And I finally got a little bit fatigued about the eighth inning. And it was only because my mechanics were so sound at that time, and that's what I was doing. Yes, 18 straight innings. I didn't come off the mound one time in that entire game. And everybody's looking at me like, how'd you just do that? I said, well, good mechanics will do all that. And so I was going to ask the doctor a question, by the way. He's been in his practice for quite a few years. Since the beginning of your practice until now, what's the percentage or increase in arm injuries that you've seen since when you first started to where it is now?
I mean, there is – so I'm seeing more. It's hard to put a percentage on that, but I will tell you that we're seeing younger athletes across the board. As I mentioned, too, the requests about, well, I have a partial injury, maybe we get an MRI, a partial injury, and they say, well, can I get the surgery that Brock Purdy had? And, you know, it's the same thing as when the Achilles gets injured, they say, can I get the same surgery that Aaron Rodgers had? And it's all kind of coming back to, and the media feeds into this a lot, too. But so that gets into these athletes, their heads and minds, whenever they're younger and younger. And then, you know, again, all these anecdotal stories here, but the one, you know, I'm doing an ACL reconstruction. They said, after you do this on my kid, are they going to be able to dunk? So we're just seeing this like across the board of all this stuff. I'm like, man, you know, surgery is becoming like, okay, let's optimize the body. And so that's also kind of interesting. We could have a whole show on that where the techniques are getting better and better. But yeah, I'm seeing more and more overuse injuries, certainly like little league elbow and, you know, shoulder injuries in athletes, college bound pitchers, kids that are like, I'm coming up on a scholarship season. More and more of that, you know, especially over the years. Certainly the biggest ramp up was actually after COVID when we all knew kind of poor mechanics and then there was a big wave of injuries. It dipped down a little bit now, but we're starting to see it kind of surge back as you know, athletes are playing sports year-round. The same sport,
excellent,
though, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Kip, could you wrap up a little bit? Give me a summary of the discussion that we've had today.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is in pitching. I've always told pitching is all about mechanics, and then once you get good mechanics, then let's learn how to pitch. And it goes for every pitcher out there. You have to do that. And one other thing I want to add to whoever's listening, all the audience out there, one thing I've always done as a pitching coach with teams is, and it's a rule of mine has always been this way, if you pitch one inning, you got to take one day off. If you pitch two innings, you got to take 2 days off. You pitch three innings, you got to take 3 days off. You pitch four more innings, you got to take 4 days off. And if you do that and work on your mechanics in between, I promise you, you're never going to have another arm injury the rest of your life if you do it that way. But the problem is,
beautiful,
most coaches don't do it that way because they want that number one pitcher that throws really hard to come in and throw today, throw tomorrow, throw the next day. And all you're doing is you're ruining the kid and his life, you know, for the rest of his life. And to me, it's not about just is he going to hurt his arm. You're going to hurt your arm, and your quality of life is not going to be good down the road. And that's one of the things that I see. I'm in a group of 12,000 ex-ball players on Facebook, and so many of these guys, their quality of life just isn't all that good because most of them can't even straighten their arms out. You know, their backs hurt, this and that, the whole thing.
Sure.
And so you got to think about down the road how your body's going to be in the end. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kip. And Dr. Varicella, thank you. And
absolutely.
Mr. Mancini, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, and let everybody know how they can get a hold of you guys. Start with you, Doctor, and Craig Roscoe, Matt Varicella, and then Kip, and then we'll talk about next week here in the last 30 seconds.
Sure. So, DJRMD, 308 at Outlook.com. Go ahead, Matt.
Matthew.Varicello@gmail.com, 814-375-6200. We're available telemedicine consultation virtually as well, too.
Beautiful. Kip, go ahead.
Kip nickgross.com and beagamer@gmail.com. And a quick shout out to my girlfriend who's back in Hawaii here, ready to go to spring break with her kids. And just telling you, hey, love you.
Beautiful. And Kip, thank you. Matt, thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
For the two guys in Pittsburgh and Kip out there wishing his girlfriend well in Hawaii, yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll talk to you next week, same time, with another great guest coming through. God bless you all, and thanks for tuning in.
Thank you very much. Thank you.